Hoopball Podcast listeners, are you a fantasy expert and want to write or podcast for Hoopball? Do you have aspirations of covering a team? Are you a master of sales and want to earn some cash on the phones? Well, we've got good news. Hoopball's recruiting. If you think you have what it takes, hit us up at Hoopball Fantasy on Twitter or by emailing teamhoopball at hoop-ball.com. Again, that's at Hoopball Fantasy on Twitter or emailing teamhoopball at hoop-ball.com.
The following is a Hoopball presentation.
Ballers, welcome back to Today in Sports Betting. This is Friday, May 22nd, 2020. As I've already said, this is Today in Sports Betting, a Hoopball presentation. Hoopball Gaming is where you will find us on Twitter, at Hoopball Gaming. Hoop-ball.com if you are in need of some fantasy basketball content or analysis, as well as other things as far as team coverage. Have premium subscriptions and other great tools to help you become a more knowledgeable basketball connoisseur. And as you've heard me talk about right here, usually I do in my bookie read, but COVID-19 has put some things in a different place. So I've began working on trying to find a local charity or fundraiser, I want to find someone doing some really good work out there and see if I can't highlight it or do some work myself, hands-on kind of stuff, if it is in my area. I know I've hopefully got listeners all over. We've got listeners all over. This whole podcast network is great. I'm going to have someone on that I'm very excited to talk to and with about a team in a certain league. I'm just going to keep dropping hints that don't mean anything. But we'll get into that. First and foremost, he is a writer, a contributor for Hoopball Grizz. And not only in his spare time does he also cover basketball and more basketball, but like he's in the front lines of like, you know, helping with the COVID situation right now. He is in the health field too. So I'm not sure how he keeps up with all the stuff that's going on in the world. Just had a newborn also. So Dave, ladies and gentlemen, this is Dave Williams. He runs the at Hoopball Grizz page. Dave, I'm going to stop babbling here and I'll let you introduce yourself and talk about some of the stuff that you've been working on recently, what you've done with us and for the Hoopball family here recently, and maybe just give us some nuggets for the Grizz, not the other team, you know what I'm saying? Just give us some rundown on the Grizz.
I got you. Yeah, man, I appreciate you having me on. It's crazy. When I started doing this, I had wanted a podcast for a while, and then getting into this has given me more opportunities. And so coming on as a guest in another podcast is really it's a big thing for me. So I really appreciate it, man. But like you said, I'm one of the contributors for Hoopball Grizz. Been doing it for this season. This is our first season, and it's definitely been crazy with the COVID stuff. It has put a huge wrench in the direction that we wanted to go. And you know, right now we should be watching basketball, playoff basketball, but we're just watching reruns and The Last Dance and, you know, whatever else we can find. So I'll be. Yeah.
And now The Last Dance is over.
Yeah, exactly. Right. We're just going to have to watch reruns of it. But we did, I did see exciting news today. Apparently the NBA is in contact in talks with Disney, so maybe July we get basketball back. I don't know.
Hey, we'll see. In a few years, Disney's gonna own the world.
They pretty much do at this point.
At this point, yeah, they got their hand in Google, and now they're just making sure the NBA and the NFL's at their mercy.
Yeah, the whole monopoly law, that's a whole different type of podcast. But
yeah.
That's
hey, speaking of Dave, what are you doing in a couple of days? Maybe we'll start a new podcast or something
on the monopoly of
Disney. Yeah.
Let's get it, man. Yeah. I'm down.
A chronological tree branch breakdown of Disney and how they control all of us. I'm kidding. That's not where I stand with all that, but it would be fun. Dave, I forgot to mention where folks can find you, and that is at dwill 2111. So 2111.
Yep.
Dwill 2111. And then also at Hootball Grizz, which is where the Hootball page is located on Twitter. There was something I saw in your bio that kind of caught my attention, and that's just because I've been a video game nut for as long as I can remember, as long as it being a sports nut, you know, like 4 or 5 years old. Mm-hmm. I saw that like you've dabbled within the NBA and MLB esports arena. Would you elaborate a little bit? Or
yeah, I mean, I didn't really do any type of coverage for MLB or esports, but I just enjoy it. You know, there's guys, and I can't, maybe it was Cowherd. There was somebody that's like, if you put me covering this stuff, I'm just going to jab my eyes out with pencils. But I enjoy it, man. I grew up playing video games. Like, I remember when I was super young watching my brother play Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then, you know, I was like, I love the company Blizzard. I don't know if you know.
Oh, yeah.
Blizzard, but, you know, so.
That's like, another podcast.
Yeah. Like, I played pretty much all of their games. And so I enjoy watching that and just watching because I've played the game. I understand the skill that these guys have to execute the things that they're executing. So it's, you know, it was never a coverage thing. Not that I wouldn't, I definitely would, but I just haven't had that opportunity.
Gotcha.
Just enjoy it, man.
Yeah, no, I am definitely in the same canoe right there along with you. I have been playing so much Madden lately, a lot more than I have in the last multiple years, just because I think Madden 20 has been one of the better Maddens that's come out in the last few years. And the Madden Cup and the championship was actually just on. And I used to watch the Madden Bowl and all that stuff whenever I was, you know, in elementary and middle school. So it was kind of cool to see that it was revitalized. Madden had been kind of falling off for a little bit now. But with that being said, you know, I wanted to transition into some questions that I had that were, you know, stemmed from some intense curiosity. The Grizzlies, as we've talked about off, you know, camera here a little bit, I've always kind of really appreciated and liked the Grizzlies. They've always been, you know, and I was just talking with Lyle about the Pelicans, another Southwest Division team. And I think it's a really awesome thing that we have two great coverers for these two teams in the Southwest Division. It's a unique division. And so I wanted to kind of figure out how you covering the Grizz was conceived. Like how did that come about? And you talked about some fan or some players that you were a fan of growing up or in your young adulthood, but were you always a fan of the Grizz or
no,
you know, you're pretty close to that area though, right?
Right. So it's the Grizzlies are the local team for me. And yeah. So I had always kind of they hadn't always been, you know, they started in Vancouver, then moved down, but since they've been in Memphis, you know, I remember my first game down there, they were playing in the Pyramid. Mm. And if you sat anywhere outside of the lower bowl in the Pyramid, it was awful. Like, you did not want to sit in the upper deck in the Pyramid, because going back up the stairs, it felt like if the wind blew too hard, you were going to fly out onto the court. That's like, it was steep and awful and the worst thing ever. But it was, so my first game down there, it was the Grizzlies and the Dallas Mavericks with
Sean Bradley,
Michael Finley,
you know, Josh Howard. Josh Allen.
So it was
Eric Dampier.
Watching those guys get going down, and it was crazy because you don't appreciate how big these are, like you don't understand how big these guys are until you get there. And so we were sitting like just off of the tunnel where the players came out.
Wow.
And the first guy that I see when we get down to our seats is Sean Bradley. And he's like standing there flat footed, grabbing the rim. And I'm like,
7'6".
He looked like something from the circus. He was right. So freaking big, man. And then on TV, compared to these other guys that are all ripped and chiseled, he looks like bones.
Uh-huh.
And then you get there, and he wasn't really all that small. Like, you know, 7'6", he looked small compared to these other guys that are muscled up. But, you know, he was muscled up too. Just he wasn't, like, as thick as the other guys, but
well, he was stretched out a little more. It wasn't as dense. That didn't stop Vince Carter from jumping over him. That's for dang sure.
Right. Yeah, definitely didn't. So I just kind of, you know, I would keep up with him a little bit here and there, but you know, I enjoyed certain players. So like for me, Charles Barkley, I was never a like a hipster, like jump on the bandwagon because everybody else does. Mm-hmm. So I appreciated Michael Jordan, but he was never my favorite player.
Right.
So, you know, it was Barkley for me. And then when Barkley was kind of fading out, I started keeping up with Kevin Garnett. Mm-hmm. And so that was my guy. So, you know, I kind of kept up with the Grizzlies, but I wasn't what I would say a fan of the Grizzlies, you know.
So – funny story, and I'll just get off of this side path real quickly. So if I stray too far, just like snap me back in. So growing up, I had this Latrell Sprewell bobblehead, and it was when he played with Minnesota, and it came with his player card. My dad came across it, and he gave it to me or whatever because he was like, hey, sports, basketball. My son likes that stuff, I think. And so – I actually started paying more attention to Kevin Garnett because of Latrell Sprewell and Sam Cassell. Sam Cassell was on those early teams also. Wally Cerbiak. Those were some really, really fun teams. And I think just collectively that team kind of captivated me. And then as the age and the years went on, you saw the greatness of KG and you realized that he definitely was the adhesive component for those Timberwolves teams, because you saw it in Boston as a much older player, and it was just so phenomenal.
So I don't know if you remember, but when it was Marbury, there was conversations about, you know, who are you building around? Which one of these two guys are you building around? And I remember when Marbury left, like there was a lot of people that were upset, and I'm like,
to go to the Knicks.
Like this dude, like, why are you mad? Yeah, right. He's a good player.
He was better in China.
you don't send Garnett out.
No.
Like that's the one. Like, this is a once-in-a-lifetime player. And not that Marbury was not good, because in his prime, he was a great player, but he was not the same caliber as Garnett. Mm. And even back then, I saw that. Not that I knew what Garnett was going to turn into in the end of his career, but just watching him and the way that he played the game, the way that he worked, it reminded me a lot of some of the older greats. And that's, you know, Larry Bird talked about the way you're going to earn respect on the court is, you know, getting after the ball. You're on the floor after the ball. You're hustling back on the, you know, doing the extra stuff. That's how you're going to get the respect. And Garnett, throughout his career, he always done that stuff. And so I saw that, and I loved watching him. And, you know, Jaren Jackson, when he first came up, Garnett was working with him in Memphis, and I'm like, please, please let me run into Garnett somewhere. Like, but, you know, I never got to run into Garnett anywhere in Memphis. But, you know, I was like, I like Jaren Jackson. And so the fact that he was working with one of my all-time favorite players, like, that was just, man, just injected into my veins. I will take it all day long. Oh, it was exciting for me.
Yeah, it would be for me as well. Some of those early 2000s players just really stuck out. Some of those guys that had some really prolific careers in the 90s that kind of just extended into the 2000s to the 2010s and so forth. It, there was a rare breed in there for that like 15-year breed. Because like, think about it. Those guys were the predecessors of all that greatness from the 90s and the Jordan and Ewing and Barkley and Stockton and Malone and Payton and Kemp era. You know, it's like, how many comparisons do you have to hear before, you know, you're just kind of like, do you even want to play basketball anymore? Or, you know, so kudos to the guys like Garnett, Kobe, rest in peace. And, you know, just some of the more dynamic talents, you know, even the guys like Vince Carter, the explosive guys, and then not only the international players to kind of, you know, encapsulate that whole bridging from the 90s to the 2000s with like, you know, the Ku coaches trying to become, you know, make European stuff a little more normal, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
started to see like, so in the Jordan, Isaiah Thomas, Magic, you didn't really see guys that were playing the four, that were handling the ball, that were making decisions like that. And then, you know, these guys in the late 90s, early 2000s and transitioning, you really started to see the game change as far as, okay, it's not, you know, you don't have to have a John Stockton on your team. If you have a decent point guard and a four that can make good decisions, then you know, you can trust him with the ball.
And a trustworthy three.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, and it's crazy even from that. It's still, the game is still transitioning to, you know, where they're chucking up threes from half court like it's regular. And, you know, it's so, that's why, like, for me, the greatest of all time conversation is so crazy because of the style of the game when Jordan played,
right,
as compared to now when LeBron plays. And it's like, man, it's like, how do you honestly pick between those two guys? And I know like that you're either on one side or the other of that.
Right.
But in all honesty, you can't really compare it because yeah, like you're going to have more threes. Like there's nothing that anybody on this planet will ever say to me that's going to convince me that anybody is a better shooter than Ray Allen. It will not happen. I don't care how many threes Steph Curry makes. I don't care. Ray Allen had the smoothest stroke. And he had an interview, and I don't remember who it was with, but Ray Allen had an interview. And in that interview, it just shows, like, the difference in the eras. He said, like, if I shot seven threes in a game, my coach told me I was settling. You know, they didn't want them shooting threes. They wanted them driving to the basket, taking a higher percentage shot.
Well, and you look at Steph Curry, he's good off the ball. You know, I think you and I could probably agree on that. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you look, all you have to do really is you look even back in when Ray Allen was playing with Connecticut. And I'm sorry if I go off on another tangent here, Dave, like I said, snap me off here because Ray Allen is actually one of my favorite players because he played under one of my favorite college coaches. I had this like handful of college coaches I selected as an adolescent. You know, I was like 7, 8 years old and I was just like, I have no idea what college basketball is really, but I like these guys. I see them on TV and they look like that they do good with their players. And I would probably want to play for them. And that was Mr. Boeheim, Tom Izzo, Jim Calhoun, of course, at the time, Eddie Sutton, because I am an Oklahoma State fan, grew up in Oklahoma. And then Mark Few, you know, like I said, off camera, I almost went to that Gonzaga camp. So I've always been a huge proponent of the Gonzaga basketball way. You know, they play a certain pedigree. And with that being said, you know, basketball, it flourishes in so many ways. You know, that's kind of where I was getting to the root of all that is just the influences and the structure that come within it. You know, I think that's kind of what makes it so spectacular. So.
And so I'll get back, like we went way off track there, but you did ask me a question about like, how did I come to start covering the Grizzlies?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a funny story, and I've told the story on my podcast, but been doing fantasy basketball for a while now, and I discovered Dan's podcast just searching one day. So I started listening to his podcast, and I'm like, okay, you know, I enjoyed it, like listening to him. He, great guest. So he was mentioning about team coverage. So I go to the website. I'm looking around trying to find Grizzlies coverage. I just tweeted at Dan. Hey, Dan, where's the Grizzlies coverage? And he just kind of threw a joke. He's like, well, I don't have anybody, but you can cover them if you're interested. And so I sent him a DM, and we just kind of talked back and forth for a little while. And it just went from there. You know, I said previously, I had wanted to do a podcast, and I didn't really know. Like, I had talked with a buddy of mine about maybe doing something with the esports. But, you know, I like esports, but basketball is where it's at for me. Like, that's just right. Number one. So when this opportunity came up, man, I was super excited. And Dan was like, hey, man, you know, just record with a, you know, little cheap headset microphone and just see if this is something that you're going to want to do. I know that I want to do this, so I'm going to get equipment because I'm going to put the work in. If I'm not good enough, it's not going to be because my sound quality sucks.
Right. No, right.
It's going to be because I just didn't have what it takes. And that's it. It was just a Twitter thing. I was like, hey, I don't see any Grizzlies coverage. And he throws it out there. Hey, if you want to cover them, here you go. And it was a lot of recording like a partial episode and him saying, okay, this is good. This is good. This is awful. Fix that. And then you go back and you do it again. And he's like, okay, you improve this, but now you need to work on this. And so Dan was fabulous when it comes to, you know, he would tell me what to do and I would sit down and, you know, Sam and I would record a show. And then he would say, okay, do this and this and this. We'd make the adjustments. And I want to say, we were probably recording shows for, man, I'd say about three and a half weeks before we actually, like, he submitted to get the show posted. Mm-hmm. And then it's just gone from there, man. And, you know, it really, when you have to start being a content creator, you have to dig in. It stretches you because you really... You know, it's easy to find information. Anybody can jump online and look at the box score. I think that the little bit of extra stuff that you do really kind of pushes you over the edge. So the extra work mm-hmm. that you do, and I'm sure that you can attest to that for, you know, the Hoopball Gaming podcast, you know, like when you're going through and you're deciding what lines, you know, you got to look at everything, you know, especially if you're like, hey, this is my pick for the day. If I'm going to place one bet, this is what it's going to be. You know, you're not just pulling that out of thin air. I wouldn't think anyway.
Like, oh, no, no.
You're digging in.
Yeah, and that, so, that's the fun part but, about it is, and that's why I wanted to start this was because I love sports so much, but this gives me a whole nother periscope to kind of view it in. It's a whole nother set of numbers to break down. It's a whole nother metric. It's a whole nother trend. It's mm-hmm. really, it's really fun. It is. But, so we were, maybe, you know, wanting to approach this like hypothetical realm, right? You know, as if the season, you know, cause like I think we might be close to getting the season to come back. So I think we should probably start transitioning our mindsets into what is actuality of, you know, potential basketball. And so I think it's a good time to ask and to bring up, you know, for you to showcase your feelings and what you think about the playoff chances that the Grizzlies had before the halting of the season. Granted, there were some big injuries that were going on, but do you think Ja is going to be able to power him through that? And then how also would this playoff run affect his rookie of the year candidacy? And what do you think would have happened if the season played out? I'm interested to hear.
So I think the season played out. If Ja had not just completely fallen on his face, that he was runaway rookie of the year.
Yeah.
And I can give credit where it's due. Zion is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But at max, he would have played 37 games. He played 19 games in the season.
Yep.
And I think, I want to say he was averaging, what, like 21 and 7 or 21 and 6, something
he
like
was,
that.
He was like, almost to a – yeah, I think, yeah, 21 and 7 sounds about pretty accurate.
So I had those numbers the other day, but I don't have them with me. But he was playing – when he came in, he was playing just like you would want a number one pick to play. Uh-huh. So I will give him credit. I like Zion. The media just drives me crazy, man. Like – so, for example, I feel like when James Harden won the MVP, that he honestly didn't deserve it. You look at the numbers
comparatively
to LeBron.
Uh-huh.
LeBron's numbers were better. So
by far.
You know, and the reason LeBron didn't get that was because of fatigue, because the media just LeBron, 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 LeBron. And I bet if you go back and you look, that there's more than one season that that's happened. And I'm worried that that's what's going to happen with Zion, because he is getting so much hype that, you know, as somebody that covers the Grizzlies, it just, when somebody is, oh, he should have won Rookie of the Year, he should have, I'm like, no, man, he would have max played 37 games, 37. Like, you cannot justify, in my book, giving a guy that played 37 games Rookie of the Year. If he goes out there and he's averaging 25 and 10 and 37 games, maybe. But I just don't feel like that's a big enough – like, Ja, the Grizzlies were not projected. I think the Vegas over-under for them at the beginning of the season was like 26.
Like, yeah, it was low. It was real low. So the way I thought of it was – and it's funny now, you know, talking to you – after talking to Lyle, because I was talking about, and my opinions may not be as popular with you and your demographic as what I was talking about with Lyle, but don't get me wrong, Ja was one of my favorite players in college when he was playing. That kid was nasty. I love college basketball. I love college football. I love college baseball. I love college sports, and that kid was a phenomenal college athlete. He's going to be a great pro. He's going to be awesome. I don't doubt that. But I think it was contingent on, you know, and I'm talking specifically Rookie of the Year honors. I thought it was going to be contingent on who got their team into the playoffs. Who pushed themselves and their team in that Southwest Division to the games they needed to win, and then to go on stretches where they need to win, like, you know, 4 of 7 or 4 in a row or get a couple wins here on the road. I thought New Orleans was a little bit more poised to do that just based off strength of schedule alone.
Sure. Yeah.
And then current health. And then also, like you said, with the James Harden complex, I thought the scope was also going to help Zion to get himself into the Rookie of the Year honors. And if the season played out, I thought I was gonna I saw New Orleans getting that 8th spot, and my Mavericks being in danger there too, because we were faltering really bad, and then Zion also winning Rookie of the Year. And then I had a friend ask me, because he was able to get Zion you know, live odds for Rookie of the Year at, you know, +500 still, and I said, how the hell did you find that? Like, yeah, like, take it. Yeah. You know, I thought that was pretty for sure locked, fired, ready to go. So,
yeah. So, like, my side of that conversation, you talk about leading their team to the playoffs. Look, let's compare the rosters of these two teams.
Right.
And this was my biggest argument. So, and like, this is not a Zion bashing thing at all.
Uh-huh.
But look at who Zion has on that team as compared to who Ja has on the Grizzlies.
Right.
And I love the Grizzlies and I love their players. But you have Brandon Ingram, which you didn't know that he was going to be what he is this year. But outside of him doing what he's doing, Drew Holiday has been in the league and been producing for, you know, like 8 years now. Yeah. So he's not a surprise. He's a pro. And Drew Holiday is head and shoulders better than anybody else on the Grizzlies roster. And then you have J.J. Redick, who's been to the playoffs every year of his career.
Yep.
So you have, like, the Pelicans roster top to bottom is just better than the Grizzlies.
That is a very valid point. And, I appreciate you do saying that because, you know, I didn't take that into consideration whenever I was talking to Lyle. And I think leading, you know, might have been a little bit of a stretch. But being a part of that playoff run or, like, getting into the playoffs, I think would have been enough.
I understand that. I understand that side of it. And you know, the Grizzlies played an easier schedule in the first part of the season. They were having some injury issues. There were guys that were close to coming back, but I'm not sure how it would have played out. But regardless of what happened, and I'm like one of the last podcasts that we done when the season was still rolling. It may have been the last one, but you know, that doesn't matter. I said, regardless of what happens moving forward with this season has been a positive for the Grizzlies.
Oh, my gosh. They had a phenomenal year. They made me so much money during the betting season. Oh, it was so great. Ira, you know, one of the other hosts here, him and I, we had many a days where we just hoot and hollered about the Memphis Grizzlies. That win streak they went on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were still catching points in that win streak. And, it was just easy calls for like a couple week period, you know, for the Grizzlies games. And even the in games, you know, the live betting, because you knew how they were going to finish. You knew how they were going to play. You saw their rotations. You saw how they utilized their team. They were consistent. It was seamless from the road to home. Mm-hmm. And when they were clicking in that, you know, the right before All-Star break, those 10 games, 15 games before All-Star break, if you were listening, that was an easy way to make some money off of the Grizzlies.
Man, it was Jenkins got so much crap about his rotation early when they were not winning early. He got so much crap about his rotations. And, you know, he's a young coach and, you know, first year in Memphis, everybody's going to over critique him, obviously. Yeah. But it was to watch, you know, we went to opening night. Sam and I went down to opening night and we watched him play against a Chicago team. And I'm like, man, they're not going to win 15 games this year. This looks awful. This looks terrible. Because when we done the preview of the season, Sam's like, they're winning 35 games. And I'm like, they won 33 with Conley and Gasol. You're out of your damn mind. Oh, sorry, you're out of your mind.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way, man. And so it is like just a transition to watch them from the first few games that we went to where they were at when the season got shut down. It was great, man. And the team is young.
Very young. The coaching's young too. If you look up and down that coaching staff, I don't think there are, you know, any of those big time veteran pieces that you see on some of these younger staffs from time to time. What I really liked though is how that first year coach handled the Iguodala and Josh Jackson situation all at the same time and got him to roll the way he did.
It was the Iguodala thing, I was fine with that because I didn't want,
I didn't want
toxic in the locker locker room.
It was better for you guys to keep him out of there for sure.
Yeah, like he could have helped, you know, a guy like that definitely 100% could have helped this team because of his experience, but he had to want to help and he wasn't interested.
Right.
You know, like when it was all going down, I'm like, oh, you know, that's a clown move and kind of, you know, ticked off about it, but I understand it. You know, at that point in his career, he wasn't interested in working with the rebuild team because of where they were projected at the beginning of the year. he never would have thought that they were where they are now. And so it's he really did do a good job. The Josh Jackson thing, he was raking in the G League, man.
Yeah.
And I'm like, when are they calling him up? You know, Grayson Allen goes down and it's just like injury. And I'm like, okay, they're calling him up. And then you see it's like 25 and 10, 20 and 18, 25 and 10, 33 and 11. And it's like, okay, this dude is, he's obviously too good to be there.
Right, right.
He's tearing these guys apart. He can contribute. And it was just where are you going to put him on the roster, I think, more than anything. And, you know, then injuries just happened. They kept happening. And so he did get the call up. And then he produced. And I was not, you know, I'm trying to – I talked to Anthony Sane off and on Twitter, and he was a very big supporter of Josh Jackson early on. And I was not, because of all the stuff that went down with him in Phoenix. I'm like, he didn't really do anything that impressed me in Phoenix.
Yeah.
I realize with him being a top four pick, he's got talent and he has potential. But just because you have those things, there's plenty of first round draft picks that never pan out.
There's plenty of top four draft picks that didn't pan. And, you know, stemming back to the KU days, you know, and me being in Kansas City, as I've said many a times before, so I'm sure you guys are all annoyed by it now, but you know, I saw a lot of it here, you know, especially working in the industry of, you know, bar and sports work. It's just, you know, everyone really liked him here and they were hooting and hollering about him and praising his athleticism and his like shot making. And I, you know, didn't really see it through conference play. And then I didn't really see it in the tournament and didn't see it in the March Madness tournament. And he got drafted 4 overall. I still didn't really see it. So with that being said, the type of prospect he was out of high school, I'm bummed I didn't see it all those times. So I hope I can see it with the Grizzlies, because honestly, I think it's a good fit for him. I really do. There was just that logjam of positional depth in them trying to figure out what to do with Grayson Allen. They also spent a little bit of draft capital on Watanabe. I mean, so they still have him that they're developing. So,
Yeah, and that's, you know, you have multiple guys on this roster that can play multiple positions. And, you know, especially the NBA is kind of transitioned to where there's not necessarily, like, you have a starting five, but it's not like point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center anymore.
Right.
It's just like, okay, here are my five guys. And you know, for some teams you have the traditional setup, but there's a lot more positionless basketball. And so having those guys like Grayson, DeAnthony Melton, Dylan Brooks, Josh Jackson, those guys that can play and guard multiple positions, there's a lot there. And that's, I don't know, Josh never, like in all of the interviews and everything that I've watched with him, he's never indicated that he was upset with the way that process went down.
Yeah.
But I just wonder if the way that went down is going to affect him staying in Memphis or not. I don't, you know, I would love for him to stick around, but then, you know, on the same hand, it's like, okay, where's everybody going to fit in? Because you look at the roster and, you know, John Conchar has been a two-way player.
Yeah.
And they like him and what he's doing. And I'm not saying that I take John Conchar over Josh Jackson.
Sure. I think he's probably a year behind.
Yeah, you look at salary,
mm-hmm.
and realistically, all right, you can't keep everybody, and we like John Conchar, the way he fits the system, how hard he works, and the stuff that he does. Do we keep a guy like him around knowing that we're going to be able to keep him around because he's not going to be a big contract to where if Josh Jackson does pan out, are we going to be able to afford to keep him?
And, you know, not to mention the draft cap, I still think there's draft capital in Josh Jackson. You know, like a team, honestly, I could see like Miami, maybe Philadelphia, Boston. I could see him really getting in a real nice position on an Eastern Conference team that needs a little bit more wing help.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you could even get like 2 draft picks out of the kid if that's the route that they do choose to take.
And that's, you know, this front office has done a fantastic job just piling up assets. If you look at how Oklahoma City, Oklahoma City's a small market team. They were competitive. They never won a championship, but they were competitive because they drafted well.
So well.
And that
they drafted James Harden. They drafted Kevin Durant. Well, no, the Supersonics drafted Kevin Durant.
But, you know, it was that franchise. So, you know, Russ and Steven Adams.
Collison. You
know, there was a lot of guys there that they brought, you know, they brought them up. They brought them in. They groomed them. And, you know, I mean, like Kevin Durant, I remember in that draft, and, you know, he's not here to verify, but one of my buddies can verify that when they took Greg Oden at number one, I'm like, they're stupid.
Yep.
Kevin Durant is going to be way better than him.
Well, and LaMarcus Aldridge was also in that draft too.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like, they were the knock on Durant was his frame. He's too small. He's never going to make it.
And that was before this like crazy slasher scorer, long wing spanned lethal shooter that Kevin Durant is. And that's just so many teams, or not so many teams, but I guess one team in general missed out.
Yeah. But man, it's just this front office, extremely pleased with what they're doing.
There's a very good infrastructure there. One of the more under the radar front offices in the NBA. If I had to make a nomination,
I'll take it, man. That's back to Josh Jackson. I'm gonna go back to that. You know, I talked a little bit about the trouble, but one success story in Memphis. And it's a different, you know, Jerry West was there when Zach Randolph came in. But Zach Randolph was kind of a troubled guy when he came to Memphis. And he was a salary dump in the trade when he came over. And he got to Memphis and ended up, you know, the city loved on him, the coaching staff, the front office. You know, they went from a guy that was troubled and on his way out of the NBA to, you know, one of the pillars of a team that was competing, you know, that they were a scoring wing away from competing for, you know, a championship.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Memphis does have a good history in that, you know, they can take a guy that's been troubled and kind of turn that ship around. And maybe they do that with Josh Jackson, because there's a lot of professional athletes, not just basketball, but all over, that, you know, these kids come up with nothing. And then they get up here and they get all this money and they don't have people around them to point them in the right direction, and they don't know how to handle themselves, and they get into trouble and they lose it. And so, you know, I don't want to see anybody do that, but, you know, you see it all the time in football, basketball, like all the major sports, guys with all the talent in the world just make bad decision after bad decision. And then, you know, 5 years down the road, they're out of the league and completely broke.
Vince Young. it was the first one that popped into my head. To kind of backtrack a little bit to those teams you were talking about that needed that scoring wing, could you imagine if they had DeMar DeRozan? Because there was talks that Toronto, before, like, you know, the whole cohesion and gelling of Lowry and DeRozan and what came to be in Toronto, they were okay with trading DeRozan. They knew what they had in him, but they knew they could also get a lot for him. Mm-hmm. And at that time, if Memphis would have made a move to kind of couple him and Jeff Green together, I think that would have been really, 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 really cool to see. And then a good component to add.
You know, I like Jeff Green, but he, you know, he didn't really do well in Memphis. He just was not the fit. And that's, you know, I had Amy on. She's a beat writer for the Memphis Flyer, and we were talking about that. Yeah. And she was talking about how she loved Jeff Green, but he just wasn't the player that Memphis needed. And right. so he got a lot of undeserved hate.
Yeah.
Because he just didn't fit. You know, that you add DeMar DeRozan to that team, and man, there's no telling that they may very well have won a championship.
I mean, that's a Western Conference final team back then, in my opinion.
What are you giving up to get him though? And that's
sure.
You know, that you see the NBA Twitter thing right now is, oh, they're a Bradley Beal away or a Devin Booker away.
Yeah, but what three pieces do they have to give up? So and then if you give those pieces up and it turns into a Bradley Beal and a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist away, you know?
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah, we're a Bradley Beal away, but we're going to give up Brandon Clark and DeAnthony Melton and draft picks to get him over here.
Oof. Man, how have we not talked about Melton yet? I love that kid.
Oh, man.
Especially when him and John Morant are on the floor together. Oh my gosh, that is so fun.
And that's so he came over in the Josh Jackson deal.
Right.
I'm like.
And he's done more than Josh Jackson.
The Javon Carter and Kyle Korver turned into Josh Jackson and DeAnthony Melton and some second round draft picks.
That's a win. That's a win.
Kyle
Korver's already in Milwaukee. He signed that veteran sign and release BS thing. And, then Javon Carter, I think he played like 2 minutes a game this season.
Yeah, he didn't play much with Memphis either. He is a good defender.
Defensive specialist.
But he just is. I would say, I'm not even going to give him that. He's a good defender. His offense is suspect at best.
He's good at running an offense he's comfortable and familiar with. You saw that in the Huggins system when they had their good tournament runs because of, Press Virginia, and they were able to get, into their sets that they wanted and fluster their opponents. But you're not going to do that and overcompensate in the NBA. So...
Yeah, and his,
I liked him in college, but I don't think he can do it.
He's got to be able to score, man.
Exactly.
That's the thing. And that's, Tyus Jones kind of.
Yeah.
Tyus
Jones. Yeah, that's a good.
His shot wasn't falling, man.
No, he didn't have one.
Everybody knew he was going to pass.
Was a 60-some-odd percent free throw shooter. So it's not like, Not Carter, Tyus Jones. I know Carter wasn't that great either. I think he was only like 70.
And that drive. Okay, I'm gonna get on a soapbox here.
I've done it twice, so you go for it.
Never in my life understand how a guard makes it to the NBA and can't shoot free throws. Like I'm a short, fat, white guy that's hadn't played basketball in forever. But when I played high school basketball, you were not leaving practice until you made 8 out of 10 free throws.
Oh, yeah. 80%, 75%. I mean.
Yeah. And so I'm like, how do you get there? How do you get to the NBA and you can't make free throws?
Believe it or not, there's some NBA teams out there that have philosophies of where they don't need their guards or their guys to get in and create contact and try to shoot free throws. So they – it's weird to me too, Twilight Zone-ish, but believe it or not, some GMs and front offices don't care. And it's weird because I think it overall hurts
they
the integrity of the game.
Man.
Exactly. Yeah.
You college basketball, John Calipari, how many championships if his Memphis team could shoot free throws, he wins a title.
Yeah.
And there's been at least two since he's been in Kentucky that if his team could shoot free throws, they win the title.
Yep.
And that's, that's just one example. Like I know that Memphis lost a game this year that they missed, I think 13 or 14 free throws and they lost the game by like 4 points.
Yep.
Shoot 75%, you win this game.
And to me, it's not all that shocking, but maybe to the normal person it would be. But if you go through an NBA box score and you look at the amount of free throws that are missed and how that equates to how you could have won that game if you would have only hit like 2, 3, 4, five more of those free throws. They're free throws. Mm-hmm. that you would have won the game. Like, that's what it comes down to, are those little tiny, like, 1-point free throws. There's a lot of games that are dictated because of that, and won and lost because of that.
Yeah, that's always that's been forever, and it will forever be. My son gets so sick of hearing it because I say that all the time. I'm like, free throws win championships.
Yep.
And then you watch a game and you watch guys miss clutch free throws. Like, yeah, it's true.
Yep.
Since we've been, going down doing season tickets and watching all the games, he's been watching that, and he's like, hey, if they make these free throws, we win. And it is, man. It's sickening at times. When it happens and your team wins because the other team doesn't make free throws, it's great. But when it's your team, what's going on? So,
hey, I play pickup ball, or I did before COVID. I play a good deal of pickup ball. And if I don't make my free throws, I don't get on the court and I don't get to play. So you best believe I'm a roll one free throw in at the beginning when we're picking teams. Because I'm not going to – I don't want to sit for a game or two to get on the court and play. I'm going to make my free throws. Mm-hmm. And that is how it is in – or how it should be in college in the NBA. If you don't make your free throws, you don't play as much,
Yeah. And like I said, I can understand a big, a guy like Shaq.
Sure.
He's playing within 8 to 10 foot of the basket. He's not going to shoot out there that much. Mm. But if you're a guard, I just feel like there's no excuse for it. If you play – anywhere with a 1, 2, or 3 and you shoot less than 75% from the free throw line, that's just terrible to me.
We share the same belief in that, definitely, and I can attest. There's been some fundamental things I've seen watching games sometimes, and it's just, free throws being the focal point sometimes. Well, Dave, moving on to this next part of the show, I've usually just kind of left this open for my guests, as I've had, a good amount of our hoop ball contributors on recently, and then other guests, just kind of talk about like what they're excited for coming up. We've had a couple big breaking, news stories the last couple of days as far as the NCAA with their proposal to get everything going back by June 1st. MLB is probably trying to get going by July 4th weekend to make it the most American weekend ever. I'm guessing all these other leagues are probably going to follow suit. They're kind of just on the tailwinds of the Korean baseball organization and Bundesliga. So are there opening storylines that you're excited for? Is there a Memphis off-season storyline that you're excited for? Are the facilities back open for the Grizzlies players? Are you eyeballing?
They did open the facilities. That happened last week. They opened them back up for voluntary, mm-hmm. Following all the guidelines and all of that. I've not seen anything as far as who's coming or whatever with that. The draft is the big thing for me. The Grizzlies, they're not going to have their draft pick. It's going to go to Boston. It's going to – but I don't
– now, is that a part of a trade? Is that – what?
Yeah, that was the Jeff Green trade.
Jeff Green. That's what I was guessing, but I just couldn't remember. Right, okay.
It was protected inside the top 8, I believe. I should know that 100% for sure, but I'm not 100%. But I'm around 90. It was like protected top 8.
Sure.
But, they're not going to be there. So Boston's getting that pick. But, there's some guys. I don't know what's going to happen with this roster going into next year. They signed Marco Gudrich to a 2-year deal.
Yeah.
And then he didn't produce. And there were times when he looked like he was going to be okay, and then there were other times where he looked like deer in the headlights, and he shot like 58%, but prior to coming overseas, he shot 58% from 3, and it's like, man, how does that just disappear? But I think the speed of the game kind of got him. Like, guys were closing out on him faster, and I don't know that for sure, but just from like watching him live, I'd say it seemed like they got on him faster than what he was expecting. And so it caused some issues for him.
Yeah.
But, you know, with all, you know, the team is young and with all the depth, who's going to be there? Who's moving? Are they going to go out and make a big splash? Are they going to try to trade for one of these big names that, you know, they're a Devin Booker, Bradley Beal away?
Yeah.
Are they going to try to make a move for one of these guys?
Well, so, and, you know, sorry for putting you on the spot. It's a common theme. I do it to my host or my guest, you know, every time it seems like, and it's something I need to cut out of my routine because it's not very nice, but, it's mostly just because of spontaneous curiosity. Cap room, do you know where Memphis sits? I mean, they don't have a lot on the books. It's a lot of first and second year contracts.
Right, but the Gorgui Dieng trade that took on.
Okay.
So the whole, like, the Justice Winslow, Gorgui Dieng, and all of that, they took on some salary. So their cap, they don't have a ton of room. So,
and Justice Winslow is still rostered, correct?
He is, yeah.
Right, okay.
And so that's when, you've got, like, Grayson Allen was out with the hip.
Yeah.
And then Justice was out
with the back.
And you've got those guys coming back.
And then they took the contract to Gorgui Dieng, but they didn't get him, right?
No, Gorgui played.
He did. Okay.
Yeah,
for some reason, I was thinking he ended up at the Nuggets somehow. That whole trade deadline thing, that was one of the more crazy ones in the last few years. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, yeah. It was good for the Grizzlies. And that's, you know, the Winslow trade for the Heat. Man, it's because they make, you know, for the cap space.
Yeah.
And you know, the Grizzlies are sitting here with Winslow looking like they're coming out freaking daisies, man. You know, it's all good for them. But I don't, you know, cap space, I don't know what kind of room. I'm really going to have to dig in and look and see. But, you know, I don't even know that they could make a trade for one of those guys right now.
Yeah,
but I'm on this side. I love Dylan Brooks. Like, I don't know if you've looked at, like, my opinion.
I did. Yeah, the defensive player of the year.
That dude, he wants to guard the best player on the other team. He wants it. He's not scared. He don't care about the name on the jersey. He wants to guard the best guy on the other team.
Yeah,
and watching him guard James Harden, and you're not going to stop James Harden. He's one of the best, if not the best scorer in the league. He was making him work for it. And that's what you have to do. You've got to have, like, James Harden's going to get 40 because he's going to get to the free throw line 700 times in the game.
Jeez.
You've got to make him earn it. You've got to make him shoot the ball a ton. And Dylan Brooks was just giving him the business. And so a lot of people are like, hey, they need this wing that does this. When Dylan Brooks was on, when he was scoring, they were playing well. They were winning.
Yeah.
I think they were like 14-1 when he scored 20.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that they need to go out and get another piece. I think they may have what they need moving forward. They just need to develop everybody.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, that's the team is young. The chemistry is there. I really like where the franchise is right now. And there's a lot of conversation of, you know, the Grizzlies just – they don't ever get thrust, like, they don't get the big spotlight. It's not a big market team.
Right.
And they've never had a superstar like Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson.
Closest thing they had was Mike Conley or Pau Gasol way back, you know, when.
Like, and I love Mike Conley for what he done for the city, for the franchise, as a player. But Mike Conley at his best did not have the superstar power that Ja Morant has.
Or potential. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I hear you 100%. Well, you know, Dave, the Grizzlies, they have a really exciting team moving forward. The Southwest division in a whole, you know, you just look at it with the Pelicans and the Grizzlies having the youth and the depth that they do and the versatility. And then, you know, what's to become of, you know, the Spurs? They're kind of in the middle, you know. Is this the next New England Patriots thing where the pieces start kind of, you know, branching out? And then you've got, you know, the Mavericks in the Rockets, you know, with some flair for sure. You know, this whole division's got flair, and I think that's what's really exciting. It's one of the more exciting divisions and more competitive divisions in all of the NBA, and I think it's probably the most competitive division in the Western Conference by far, from top to bottom. You know, it's just in divisions, you try to build your team to beat the other teams in your division. You can see this similarities and this, you know, the total parallelism of team building from, you know, New Orleans and the Grizzlies, and then, you know, the Spurs. And it's pretty neat to see how all the construction comes about. Yeah. And I'm excited to see what happens if we return to the season or if we start.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. Yes, I'm ready for more information on that, right, to see exactly how that's going to pan out.
I've got a good feeling.
Are they going to go straight into playoffs? Are they going to play the season games? I don't think that they can legitimately play out the rest of the schedule. So I don't know. That's definitely going to be something to watch moving forward. But like the division, I think so. To me, Popovich is a lot like Bill Belichick, and like, I'm just not going to question him because he's one of the greats and he will figure something out.
Yep.
But the other teams that we talked about, the Pelicans, the Mavericks, and the Grizzlies, for sure. The Rockets are a great team right now, and they're poised to compete for a championship.
They are going
to
have the most vast decline in the next two years. It's going to come quick.
You've got Russ and Harden. Neither of those guys are young anymore. And so not that they're just going to fall right off the face of the earth, but that team is not – it's not built for longevity right now.
Well, then when you get money involved.
Right.
So
it's the Mavericks, man, like those three teams, like the Mavs, Pelicans, and Grizzlies – they're going to be exciting to watch. I, in the next 4 or 5 years, like those are going to be, I'm going to watch those three teams, watch their games more than anybody, obviously the Grizzlies, but you know, I watched a lot of Mavericks games and a lot of Pelicans games as well, because, you know, I like Drew Holiday.
Drew Holiday. I was actually talking about this with Lyle. Drew Holiday was my favorite part of all those teams that had Anthony Davis on it. Anthony Davis was nowhere near my favorite part of those teams. It was Drew Holiday. I've always loved Drew Holiday. That guy is the way he plays ball. It's mm-hmm. it's something different.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah.
But hey, Dave, this has been a blast. I haven't really dug into the Grizzlies in quite some time. I was actually kind of surprised by the knowledge bank that I was pulling out and just remembering random things about the Grizzlies throughout the season. You know, one of my favorite games from this year was that game that they played against the Rockets, where it was just back and forth, back and forth. So, you know, I wanted to make sure to tidy this last bit up with a nice bow here and make sure I thank you, you know, many more times, and make sure that the listeners do know and are reminded of where they can find you and, you know, where they can get their Grizzlies fill for the coverage. And that is DWill2111 and at HoopBallGrizz. Again, it is a hoop-ball.com, you know, family piece on Twitter. It's a part of the HoopBall Fantasy franchise. And then, you know, from there, there's this, the HoopBall Gaming. And if you don't find what you need with us, with basketball or betting or whatever, it's you're probably, I don't know. I'm going to leave that where that is without insulting people. So
I don't know if you're going to find it.
I may lose some listeners after that. So let's not do that. But Dave, I thank you again, buddy. Let's do this again soon, especially if we do get the season popped up and we get some clarity as far as what's going to happen. I'm excited about the NBA draft. I know that's an important part of Adam Silver and what he loves for the NBA. So I would love to see you know, how the Grizz maneuver around that lost draft pick and see what they might try to do to compensate and maybe some free agency or offseason work. But it's something I would love, you know, digging into. So I would love to have you back on for that. And, Bud, I appreciate it again. This was fun.
Yeah, man, it was a blast for sure. So you just let me know, man. I'm down anytime, and especially when we get some more news about how they're going to play out this season. I'm ready for it. Any kind of sports, honestly, basketball especially, but just something that's Netflix and Hulu only have so many shows that are worth watching.
Yeah, I've slowed down a little bit. Yeah. Well, hey, thanks again. We'll be in touch. And to the listeners, thank you again. You know, we'll be around on the next one. You know, I'll be there. Hope you guys are as well. Be safe, and I will see you around. Bye-bye.
This has been a Hoop Ball presentation.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.